Well, I got to tell you, if Edgar Cayce says that there are Hall of Records at the base of the Sphinx, he said they were in three areas on this planet. There was one in Central America, there was another one in the Bimini Islands area, and then another one at the base of the Sphinx. I believe it. I believe it. I think he was a very accurate prophet. We'll be back in a moment with Edward Malkowski. We'll chat with you as well to get some of your theories on the pyramids and how old you just think civilizations were anyway. Back in a moment. Edward Malkowski, our guest. Edward, I happen to think that the Hall of Records, I think it does exist, and they do exist, might be time capsules, quite frankly, with all kinds of things. Did you ever think about that?
Yeah, I have, and actually I would pretty much agree with you on that.
I don't know what's in them, but they're time capsules. They're probably Harley-Davidson motorcycles, for all I know.
That could be.
Of everything that you were researching, for all the work you've done over the years, what is the single most compelling thing that you've come across?
The single most compelling thing is the evidence that not only did the ancient Egyptians have a certain technology that was advanced, but also they had an understanding and philosophy of life that is pretty close to where quantum physics is taking our modern science today. I think that's just fantastic. They believed, their religion is really hard to pin down. You know, there's Judaism, there's Christianity, there's Islam, and there's other religions today that have, you know, a doctrine and a set of texts that explain what their beliefs are. Well, the ancient Egyptians really didn't have that, and it's hard to tell what they did have. But earlier on, I was talking about a philosopher by the name of René Schwaller de Lubitz, who spent more than a decade there during the 40s. And his prime goal was to figure out what the Egyptians thought, and he spent most of his time at the temple at Luxor studying it and coming up with how they viewed the world. And his conclusion is that they viewed man as an abstract quality, and that the entire cosmos is the manifestation of that quality into quantity. In other words, he believed that the entire cosmos is man himself, man with a capital M, and that this quality fragments and manifests itself as what we see.
So they basically believed that there was some connection with the universe.
Yes, definitely.
A one-on-one somehow, that a lot of people who are intuitive, psychic, have been able to do that too, but perhaps the Egyptians took it a step further because somewhere along the line they were able to build the structures that they built.
Well, yeah. If you look at Egyptian civilization, if you look at the big overview, they had advanced technology, and that's clear. You can go to Egypt and visit and see what they built today. Now, if they also had that, it also makes perfect sense that they also had an advanced philosophy that was based on the science.
There's no question about that. Do you think they left this planet or got blown up on this planet?
I think they got blown up here. I don't see any evidence that extraterrestrials actually came here. I think the story is much more intriguing, and that reality is actually subjective and not objective.
What do you think, though, of the work of Zechariah Sitchin? Have you looked at that?
Yeah, I've had a look at his work. I particularly don't agree that extraterrestrials came here. and spawn mankind.
Okay, let's go. Let's take some calls while we chat tonight. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast, you're on the air. Hi there.
Yeah, George.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Yeah, this is Reed in West Covina, your old friend here.
Sure.
How are you doing tonight?
Good, Reed. Good.
Listen,
to talk.
You know, I talked to you about this subject before, and I don't know if you ever got a chance to go back in the archives of right over the millennial turnover 2000. And I told you that, you know, they did that renovation on the Sphinx, I think it was in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was all that was just a big facade. They found the Atlantean records, supposedly. They had a guest on with Art who talked about it for 3 hours, about what the records contain. There was like 32 golden leaf tablet records that were described the fall of the Atlantean civilization and how it did sink in one day, basically. They did have a forewarning, and they were instructed. They had a priesthood. They sent two group of priests, 12 priests in each group, to hide the records because they knew this cataclysmic event coming. And one was hidden down in central Yucatan Peninsula, and the other one was hidden underneath the Sphinx, and they were instructed to do this. They did recover these, and of course, they've covered it up, and they don't want the world to know about it, but some of it has leaked out, and to the best of my knowledge, I remember back, and this was in the 70s, Leonard Nimoy used to head off this television series.
Yeah, it was called In Search Of, and your phone's starting to crack on
In Search Of, okay, and I remember... They were diving off of Bimini, and this I remember this camera, and I saw the top of a pyramid sticking up about 3 feet out of the water, and this diver recovered a crystal ball that must have been 2 feet in diameter.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt that near Atlantis, in that region, which is again where Edgar Cayce says Atlantis can be found. Those things have been found, and it's been going on for a long, long time. Edward, have you gone on any searches?
No, I haven't. Most of my work has been historical based.
Okay.
But as far as the Atlantis question goes, I do believe there's some pyramids or some structures that have been found in and around Cuba that would corroborate something like that.
They haven't verified it yet, but they have found some. They're trying to get money to go down there via submarine. Some people believe what they could be is from the Cuban Missile Crisis in the early 60s, that's where they dumped some of the concrete that they were building the silos with. I think otherwise. I think there's something else down there.
Well, the whole Atlantis question is really a story that just does not want to die, and I think it doesn't want to die for good reasons, because there's evidence, you know, in the Mediterranean and in the Gulf here in the Western world that says, you know, some civilization did exist. Personally, I don't believe there was an actual city named Atlantis. I think the entire civilization was Atlantis.
Yeah, it was a continent, probably.
Yes.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
George, is that you?
It is me, and now it's you.
Now it's you. This is Tom calling. I'm listening on 1190KEX out of Portland, but I'm actually up in Port Angeles, Washington. I have to rely on a skip for you guys because the topography doesn't let my local station get through. Anyway, in the time of Noah, right, in Genesis, right, there's been a lot of documentation, and it may have been covered up over the years, that immediately after the flood, the descendants of Noah went back to being, some of the descendants of Noah went back to being seafaring peoples, and they did go all over the oceans, and the remnants of some of those seafaring peoples became the Native Americans, the ones that got left behind and got wrecked off and on the North and South American continents, those people became the Mayans and the Aztecs and some of the Eastern Seaboard American tribes, American Indian tribes. And that was well enough known that in King Solomon's time, and one of Art Bell's shows that I found particularly fascinating corroborated this, that a lot of the copper that flowed into the Mediterranean was actually mined out of the Midwest and the Great Lakes. So they got this far north.
And they are apparently still, according to Glenn Kimball, they found some artifacts that look somewhat Egyptian with the hieroglyphs, also in the Midwest here in this country. Now, you must have heard on that one, Ed, being from central Illinois.
Yes, I have heard that one. And while we're on that topic of the Bible, you know, there's the story of Noah. There's also the story of the Tower of Babel, which also corroborates what's being said. The Tower of Babel story says that at one time the people were of one language and one speech, and they could do anything that they put their minds to, and they decided to build a tower. And God saw this and was angered, and he would then disperse mankind and mix up his languages so he wouldn't be able to do that. Now, that's just a story, sure. But if you look at it and try and take facts out of it, like the story was based on a real event, we have a civilization beforehand that was of one speech and one mind. And then they were scattered over the planet with different languages. Well, how could that happen? If the civilization did exist and they did have one language and a catastrophe happened that destroyed most of the civilization, naturally the people who did survive would be in different areas and they'd be isolated. And as time went on over the thousands of years, they would develop their own unique languages. So it makes sense.
All right, next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Will from Madison, Wisconsin.
Well, hello, Will. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. I say I've become a blogger, and I'm building my own website. But
well,
if you allow me to do it, two blogs, Phoenix.
Well, not at 7. This time. Not at this time. Let's get into the guest here.
Okay. Well,
fair
Phoenix
enough.
7, take a look at it. Okay. This gentleman may, in fact, be correct. He mentioned that possibly in the north survived some early humans or whatever became early humans. And I argue the case courteously that possibly if something did happen on planet Earth, some humans had lived in caves way deep down, and they did survive this huge catastrophe. It might have been a huge boloid, terribly big, that may have whizzed by or crashed into Earth. In Egypt, for example, and you mentioned Zachariah Sitchin, by the way, he may be correct that the language spoken by the Sumerians,
mm-hmm.
It's interesting, Sumeria sounds like the word for the Finns, Suomi, but also it may mean dark pigmented people, don't mean intend any racism there, Summa, Tumma, dark pigmented. Also, another one that's an interesting book is by a rabbi, Harold Kushner, To Life. He mentions that as Moses was coming out of Egypt, God spoke to Moses in an enigmatic language, unknown to Moses, Ehya, Asher, Ehya. They think it means whole, everlasting whole. And Ehya means exactly that, whole, unbroken. Asher Askaroipi means forever, never created, never ends. That would be God. Again, Ehya, unbroken. And lastly, I'm going to end this. It's just so intriguing. You mentioned one language. There may have been one language. And I don't mean any racism or imply any superiority by any one language over another, but it may have, in fact, been some kind of Finno-Ugric. The reason why I present this is because the word pyramid, if you look in the British Encyclopedia and everything, its ideology is unknown. It may, in fact, be Finno-Ugric pyramita. Pyra is wheel, mita is measure. They built the pyramid with the shaft and the Sphinx to measure the slow rate of rotation, movement of the planet Earth with that shaft pointing at that star, south star that went up and down in it. It is a stone clock. And lastly,
a big clock.
Egypt, Aikapitaya. Sahi Hawass, I've spoken with you. I've sent you my material. Don't be a racist, Sahi. Be humane. There may have been other tongues there, languages in Egypt long ago. Egypt, Aikapitaya, timekeeper. Yes. I could go on and on, but you've got a good show, Nori. And how do you answer there, young fella?
All right, young fella, Edward.
Well, yeah, you mentioned that Moses, and Moses was probably the greatest Egyptian of all. But as far as the different tongues and different peoples, that's clearly the case. Egypt was a candle in the dark for the ancient world, and everyone seemed to want to go there because it was a booming society. You had people coming in from the Mediterranean area, from Samaria. You had the Hyksos people coming in, and Moses himself was supposedly an immigrant. And, you know, as far as the Western world goes, biblically, he was the most famous Egyptian of all because he left Egypt and went on to create the State of Israel. So, yes, I agree.
The history that occurred in that region of the world so long ago. I would have loved to have been there, Edward.
That would have been fantastic if we had a time machine, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. West of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there, George and Edward. I'd sure go with you, too. You think there'd be room.
That'd be fun, wouldn't
it? I'm Suzanne from Portland, Oregon, and thank goodness I've finally been able to get in to say my 2 cents worth. But I really do believe that the pyramids and the Sphinx were built from or helped built by people from another planet. I do believe that we're not the only intelligent beings in this solar system.
I sometimes tend to agree with you on that one, too.
And I do believe that if our government was more true with us, we would know by now that we are not. But
well, that's interesting. Edward, why isn't science... I mean, we've got researchers like John Anthony West and people like you and Christopher Dunn. But how come we're not having a major scientific effort to go ahead and do something? Instead, what we see is a live television show where they bust through a little chamber door, and that's supposed to be a big deal. Why aren't they doing a really thorough job to try to ascertain what's going on with those pyramids? I mean, I'm told, for example, that there could be another inverted pyramid under the main pyramid. You've heard that, haven't you?
Yes, I have heard that. Well, the main reason is that it's political. The status quo have their version of history, and they tend to want to protect it. And change takes a really long time. 500 years ago, the world was flat. Well, you know, and then someone said that, no, it's round, and he got in big trouble for it. So it may take a long time for different theories to come forth and challenge the status quo and then start to change.
Edward, your website, which one do you want to use here? The Sons of God?
Sons of God, Daughters of Men.com.
Okay, and there's a dash in between, right?
There's a hyphen, yes.
Between yeah, you've got to get that hyphen. All right, we'll be back in a moment. We'll continue chatting with Edward Malkowski. We'll take some phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Yeah, our guest will be Sylvia Brown on our next Coast to Coast program, so get ready for that. Sylvia is ready to talk about things going on in 2006, but we'll be back with you and our guest, Edward Malkowski, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, along with our guest, of course, Ed Malkowski. Edward, I guess we could call them the Egyptians of the prehistory era. When something happened then, whether there was an asteroid or they blew themselves up, how long, in terms of years, do you think it took for the current Egyptians to come about on this planet?
Oh, just about 6,000 years. Whatever happened, happened about 9,500 B.C., and that decimated the planet. And it took, you know, up until 3,000 B.C. for enough people to get together and then start to reform civilization.
Okay, so it's not like we started from total scratch.
No, not recently, but we could have even longer ago.
West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm glad to be on. I've been doing some reading in the past, and the question about how long it took after the Tower of Babel and the dispersion of the people, did it take to form new languages? And scientists have done some experiments on that, and they found that it only took one generation, and it was the children that did it, and they could form whole new languages, syntax, the whole ball of wax, in just one generation. So that kind of gives person a little bit when the people were dispersed, of course, then each little place had its own little languages, and I'm sure that it undoubtedly had little bits of the preceding one.
You know, and I would have thought maybe even before one generation that they might have been able to get the languages quicker.
Well, the way I understand it is that when you have parents combining, it's more of a pidgin. It's not a true new language. And it's only the children themselves that make the new language.
Okay. Thanks for your input. Edward, your comments.
I don't see why that couldn't happen. We have languages that changed today. Let's just look at our own English language. It's only been around since the 12th century, and it's gone through multiple changes.
First-time caller line, let's go to you. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, hi, George.
Welcome, sir. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the mountains. This is Steve.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I wanted to back up Ed in something that when he was talking earlier, you know, before he went to the caller lines about Zahiwas, who I'm going to call that guy in Egypt now. But it's almost like museum wars, because we've been trying to reach him to get a clarification from him for over a year. On that entrance, I think you're referring to over there in Egypt.
The Hall of Records?
Yeah, Hall of Records, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what we saw, what my research indicates is that he pulled out something funerary material, and he called it a certain thing. And we've been trying to get him to clarify that ever since.
Good luck.
Well, good luck. But see, that's the point. That's why I want to back up Ed, because I think that he is totally incorrect, and I think that he's just taking everybody for a ride. When I was in college, I learned about the possibility that the massive death pyramid was made first before any of the others, and nobody from Egypt ever made it in the first place, and they tried to copy it.
See, I think he's been given a blank check up there in Egypt to do whatever he wants, and that's strange all by itself. He doesn't seem to have to report to anybody. You know, you talk about the antiquities out there. One wonders what the heck's going on.
Exactly, and that's my point, because I can give you a specific reference that he's failed to respond to, and he doesn't seem to be applicable whatsoever about anything. And it's almost like our SETI program, which I can give you more info.
Well, Hawass has built his own little kingdom out there.
Yes.
Nobody's touched it. I don't know why. There seems to be a hands-off approach there. And, you know, he refuses to acknowledge anything else other than the fact that modern-day Egyptians
built it, yeah. That's why I call it Museum Wars, because we were working through a museum trying to get a response from him.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
He even came over for the King Tut to her and didn't respond and then left. And as far as I know, he has no clearance. He has no above top secret clearance, even in Egypt, let alone here. So he should answer questions at least to other museums.
And every researcher who wants to go to Egypt has to go through him.
Exactly. And I'm sure Ed had a lot of trouble dealing with somebody like that.
What does Anthony West say about him? Have you ever talked with him, Edward, about that? Ed, and thanks for your call.
Yes, I have. There for a while, Zahi Hawass and John had a little bit of spat going on. But recently, from what I understand, from what John says, they've become quite good friends. But as far as this goes, I think you have to look at it from Zahi Hawass's perspective. He is in charge of Egypt's number one economy, and he probably takes it seriously. And, well, he wants to protect what's there. So that could be part of the reason why he's...
I think he'd get more tourism there if he said, yes, we found the Hall of Records, this is what's in there, or, you know, we believe our ancient Egyptians received help from above, or they had some incredible technology. He doesn't say any of that. And,
no.
Yeah, there's going to be a handful of people who truly believe the Egyptians built those pyramids by their sweat and their blood. I can't see it. I can't see how those thousands of blocks were done like that. And you know what? For all of us, Edward, even today, to be perplexed about it, it's a bizarre, bizarre story. I mean, there's some people I've had a guest on who believes that there was made with almost like liquid molds up there, and then they poured it.
Right, kind of like concrete.
Yeah. I mean, they had high-tech equipment, and I will always believe that.
Well, as far as that goes, I'm not an engineer or a mechanical expert. As far as that goes, I kind of have to default to Chris Dunn and his power plant theory. I mean, how they built it and what it actually did outside of producing some kind of power, it is truly the mystery of all mysteries.
Yep. Wildcard Line, welcome to the show. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hi, my name's Dell. I'm calling from Dallas, Texas, listening to you on 570 KLIF.
Sure thing.
I have a really interesting question. It's kind of multi-part. In regards to Edward's, you know, the thing he was trying to explain earlier with the re-rising of the cycle of mankind and so forth.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. My phone did something funny. Anyway, I have a really interesting theory behind that. What's to say that there's not a separate part of humanity that has been for a very long time spacefaring, and perhaps it's them using Earth as a gene pool repository type setup?
Explain a little more.
All right. Say humans, exactly like we are, are out there in space doing their own thing, have been since before the pyramids.
All right.
That helped them build it.
From other planets?
Maybe not. I mean, I don't know them, so it's hard to say.
All right.
But it's a neat theory, and it would explain where, you know, after Cataclysm, man still happened to be there, our population boomed again, the technology to build massive megalithic structures.
And then where'd they go, though, after they helped?
Left. We're here as a gene pool repository. Their numbers dwindle, they come back.
All right, Edward, your reaction. I like that.
Well, it's possible. It's possible. I don't count it out, but as far as the gene pool and the DNA is concerned, I go back to the idea that the nature of man is abstract, and that we have the physical universe in order to experience, and that DNA is kept in microbes. So if microbes get shut off from, say, like Mars to Earth, that's kind of believable. Or if they came from somewhere else and landed. One way or another, our DNA does continue, and we keep going.
Is there any way that the pyramids and the Sphinx could be millions of years old, as opposed to thousands of years old?
I'm not so sure about the Sphinx because of the weathering on it, but I would think that it's possible that the pyramids could be millions of years old, yes.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Greg listening to you on the Big 8, CKLW.
In Detroit. Hi there, Detroit, Windsor. Yeah.
Let me take this a little bit in a different direction. You know, there are three biblical accounts, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, of Jesus making the quote that the stone that the builders rejected became the head of the corner. And he was referring to himself and obviously referring to the pyramid on that. So what I get out of that is that obviously there was some kind of a controversy between some intelligent life on Earth and him, because obviously they had to know of him. And this predates apparently the Genesis account of the creation of man as we know it today. And what I see is in Genesis 1:1 and 1:2, there's a big gap in time between, it says God created the heavens and the earth. The very next verse is the earth was without form and void, or utter destruction. Mm-hmm. God didn't create the earth in utter destruction. So there's a big account of time there that's missing. And apparently there was, you know, a cataclysm, a war, you know, as the scriptures say. And apparently I would say it was between whatever intelligence originally was building the pyramids and God. And there was this war, and Earth was destroyed, you know, not totally destroyed, but the civilization was destroyed. And now there is a new creation of man to deal with this. So I would like a comment on that. And one other thing before I hang up,
okay,
is I would
sure.
love to hear Richard Hoagland weigh in and discuss what he knows about the pyramid and all that on Mars and how it correlates to the pyramids that we have in Egypt. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Go ahead, Edward. Of course, Richard would say that we are they, quite frankly.
Yeah. We are they. And as far as he was talking about in Genesis 1:1 and 1:2, where there seems to be this time gap between those two scriptures, this is understandable if mankind was destroyed and didn't come back. Again, it's all about consciousness and the consciousness desire to manifest itself in a physical way. If we destroy this world, consciousness will rebuild it through DNA, building the form back up to the human.
All right, you still with us?
Yeah, I am. But it sounds like that is taking the creative input away and the decision-making power away from God, and that we are our own gods, and that we proliferate ourselves. And that's not what I get out of this. I get out of this that the original controversy wound up with the creation of intelligence that God had made being destroyed, and that man, as we know him today, is a new creation of intelligence.
Well, it's God is just a concept. We don't really know precisely who or what God is. I mean, as far as the ancient Egyptians, they would say that God is truly unknowable.
Well, I think Jesus argued that point by saying, he's seen me, he's seen the Father, and Christ was endeavoring to make known who the Father was while he was on this earth. And he referred back to all the scriptures from the Old Testament, because he says, study the scriptures, for they testify of me. And obviously there was no New Testament written during the time of Christ, so he was going back to the most ancient of scriptures to reveal this. In fact, that's where the quote about the stone that the builders rejected came from originally.
Yeah, but there's other areas of the Bible, specifically in John, where he claims that we are all interconnected, like when his disciples asked him, you know, what are you really talking about? And he says, I am in the Father, you are in me, and I am in you. And that seems to me that he was saying the actual essence, the observers that we really are, we are all one quality or entity. And it's just the fact that we have to manifest as individual beings is what creates that idea of separation.
Sounds like most of us do agree, though, Edward, that something happens, some kind of cataclysm, an explosion, a war, something big happened. We just can't pinpoint the year or how far back.
That's correct. I agree.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. There you go.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yep, sure can.
Hi, my name is Angelica, and I'm calling from Lewiston, Idaho.
Okay, Angelica.
And my question is in regards to the Pyramid of Giza. I was just wondering about the crystalline powder that supposedly resonates from your brain after you meditate. They say they found that in the Great Pyramids in the chambers, like the King and the Queen chambers. Do you know anything of that?
They found an actual crystal?
No, crystalline powder. I read in this book by Bob Frizzell called Nothing in This Book Is True, But It's Exactly How Things Are, that when you meditate, there's a certain crystalline powder that resonates from your brain, from, I don't know if it's the pituitary gland or what gland it is. And they say they've found that because, I don't know if you've heard, but also they say that the pyramids were used for to practice ascension, right?
Some believe that. To ascend into the heavens.
Well, just to practice ascending up to higher levels of consciousness.
Yes.
Well, yes, that I have heard that some believe that the pyramid would create a vibration that would vibrate in harmony with the human brain, and that would create this sort of resurrection or ascension to have kind of a calm, peaceful view of life. And that's part of what helped Egypt be so successful.
I see. Well, that answers my question then. Thank you.
Okay, appreciate it. With all that kind of knowledge, with all that kind of technology, even after the fact, because they obviously, the new wave after whatever happened, picked up, why couldn't they sustain it? Because eventually they lost out, right? The Romans,
right.
Everything took over. What happened?
Well, what I think happened is that the original Egypt, 3000 BC, was created by those survivors of the cataclysm, and they started to recreate their civilization. Now, and this is from the archaeology, that we know that people from the northeast, from Samaria and different areas to the northeast of the Mediterranean, started to migrate down into Egypt. Maria Gimbutas did a lot of work on this, and she refers these people as the Indo-Europeans. And they, as they migrated in, they had this patriarchal culture and a very different view of what God is. And over many thousands of years, those two cultures mixed and actually kind of diluted society.
Edgar Casey.
Casey, that's how it decayed.
All right, Casey believes that they all stemmed from Atlantis. Some went to Egypt, Central America, and all over the rest of the map. We'll be back.